I had an idea that I wanted to float out to people and see what you think. So today I spent the day actually outside. It's been really overcast here, foggy, but warmish, like in the 60s, and it's supposed to rain all next week. So I spent some time preparing some like four different kinds of poppies and some larkspur, which you direct sow outside in the garden beds that I made last fall. And it was really lovely, even though I haven't seen the sun in like 4 days. It was nice to be outside with my hands in the dirt. And I don't think I mentioned this before, but I had this beautiful little bird visitor a couple weeks ago. It's the ruby-crowned kinglet. And it's this tiny little bird, and it's very chirpy, and it's sort of a gray and sort of olive yellow color. It's tiny, smaller than a chickadee, but at the top of its head, it has a cap. So it's like a chickadee, but instead of a black cap chickadee, it's red. And then when it's excited, the red stands up like a mohawk. And I have this azalea bush that's outside my living room window, and it must see itself. And so it likes to talk, like, and hope, I'm glad it doesn't fly into the window, but it came back today while I was working on prepping some beds and getting those flowers planted, and it was just lovely. And it just reminds me about where our good energy is. And I wanted to talk a little bit about sort of perspective and energy management, and to make a proposition for this spring that might be worth considering. And I don't know, maybe no one would be interested in it, but it's just an idea that I had. But first off, about energy, yesterday I had the opportunity to do a practice session with a woman here. She does Qigong, and it's sort of like a heart-centered Qigong. And in one of these synchronicities, it turns out she studied Qigong in Austin under Li Zhengfeng, who was a Chinese wushu master who was brought to Austin to work at an acupuncture school in the 90s. And he actually has this connection to Julian Gresser, who's doing the Big Heart Intelligence in California. And you know, so for me, I have these synchronicities, but the woman who does the teaching, she's amazing. And I tried to explain to her some of the stuff about that I had mapped about the Big Heart Intelligence and the community blockchain well-being and sort of my concerns about the blockchain part of it. And we started that conversation, but it didn't quite get as deep as I was hoping it would get. But I'm trying to model sort of ways of being, because I've had these synchronistic exchanges with people here in Hot Springs that on paper, if I had just looked at someone and said, oh, they're connected to this, or they're connected to that, or they're from here, and they're probably that, I wouldn't have had many wonderful opportunities. And so when I just get beyond myself and I actually go and meet people in their actual human body selves and their actually beautiful energy selves, they're really nothing about the imaginary thing that I had in my head about what they might be, and they're actually pretty great. And so this is part of my energy management growth opportunity. And I'm saying this not to say I'm better, it's just I'm trying to show my weaknesses and my learnings, that in the past, I spent probably a good, 8 years at least studying all of this stuff about emerging tech and finance and social impact and privatization and these different things. I was very anxious and I was very angry about it. And it had deleterious impacts on my family, the extent of which I didn't fully appreciate till I came out the other end. And I wasn't doing it to try to hurt them. I was doing it because I felt like it was important for me to take certain positions. And most of that was trying to find ways of being engaged in a process that really wasn't ultimately very actionable. But sometimes you have to go through it before you realize, like, oh, that wasn't going to be the way I could fix it. And what I've been emphasizing lately and trying to figure out how to do it in a way that doesn't sound like a self-help book or something is that I think that there's something to this idea of quantum superposition and archetypes and synchronicity and energy flow that actually is very old, that goes way back to the Tao and the Wei and the Qi and the Prana and mystical connections to God, and that we've kind of put that all in a back drawer, or if it's back there, we call it esoteric things or occult things, and we don't talk about them, or we talk about them, you know, we use words that sort of marginalize them or put them in boxes, and I don't know how to talk about them outside of all that baggage. I just kind of want to throw off all this baggage and talk about information theory and energy, and that we are kind of made up of all of that, and that's what I really wanted to emphasize in that talk about Joseph's work is sort of the information theory and acoustics and resonance and sort of the back and forth between us in the 3D world and the divine in the space of all things. And the idea of having a conversation, that we in this embodiment can be a fractal of that and experiencing our qualia and our worldviews and having this interchange through other kinds of ontopoetic signs and symbols and experiences that are based on how we operate in the world, which is different from every single person. How I operate won't be how you operate, but that we can still have enriched lives from this process, even in the face of these enormous social changes that are happening. So this is what I'm trying to do, not very effectively. And again, one of the obstacles is you know, people come in with their own sort of reality tunnel and frameworks and tender spots and vulnerabilities. So when I'm trying to communicate things, they don't always land the way I wanted. But so long story short, I want to say that there are a number of people who, like, if I look them up on the internet and I'm like, oh, this is, oh, I don't know. But I went and I made myself available and I opened my heart to the opportunities and they opened their hearts and I found community, right? And so despite my first instincts, which actually weren't good, to be afraid or be concerned, I put myself out and wonderful things actually unfolded. And so among the wonderful things that unfolded, you know, I have my friend who's the Sufi mystic fairy godmother, and she introduced me to the friend who does the Qigong practice, the heart-based Qigong practice, and we're rolling into, I guess, the Chinese New Year. And, you know, I think people have a certain idea of what they think maybe Arkansas is, but it's actually incredibly wonderful and diverse and eclectic and cool. And the quirkiness of me really fits in here. And so they're having a Chinese New Year celebration here in Hot Springs, a town of, you know, 35,000 people in a public park. And it's connected to the Emergent Arts Cultural Arts Center. And as part of that lantern celebration, they're going to do a Qigong demonstration. And so this friend was trying to line up people to, like, anyone in the audience can do the moves. They're very simple. And she designed them in a way that was very approachable to anybody, really. It's only like a 10-minute movement series, but also kids, like, you sort of shake and then you, you know, part of it is like you sort of do this prayer thing and then you laugh and it's fun. And then you have like a chi, you put your hands up like a V and then you move different ways and you're like a chi mixer and it's very fun. And so anyway, I got a chance to participate in like a practice round. And the most wonderful thing is that the celebration, the lantern celebration, is on February 14th, which is Valentine's Day, which is awesome because I'm alone on Valentine's Day. And so instead of being like, meh, meh, I don't have anyone to be with, I'll be with people celebrating the lanterns and the new year with my good energy and my chi blender. So I'm going to be doing that. And I guess this is all sort of a lead up to how can we be in this time that is like we're riding these really big waves. And I just want to emphasize that we live inside of stories. Our minds are incredibly powerful. We're amazing imaginative storytellers. And how we imagine the world actually kind of is the world that we live in. And now that we're interacting with these strange online systems of information, digital information, and that's algorithmically led, and this is all part of sort of a socio-cultural evolutionary information process that we don't really understand how it is. Like, we just wandered into Facebook thinking we were gonna look at our, like, you know, nephew's graduation and my friend's new pet and, you know, find out when, you know, so-and-so's uncle passed away or something, but it's way more complicated than that. And clearly that has happened since, you know, all of the lockdown stuff in 2020 and everything, that the trauma for both sides that was incumbent on all of what happened. And that's informational. And we're still dealing with the sort of repercussions of that and how we navigate it. So part of it, and I mentioned in my earlier talk about this idea of the muscle testing and the heart forgiveness and managing your leaky energy. And I've had a number of sort of synchronistic things happen beyond the fact that, you know, this person and the Qigong opportunities and things like that, that have pointed the way to me that the idea of our energy, our heart energy and our psychic energy, our chi, you know, And having control of that, right? Like not outsourcing that to other people and actually even being aware of it, because, you know, I didn't even know it was something that you could be aware of until I was in my 50s. That's terrible. You know, and I'm not saying like, oh, we need to foist, like, you know, all the meditation stuff is foisted on little kids, but wouldn't it be nice to kind of know how our operating system works energetically, right? And that we can actually have some boundaries and control over how our energy works. And so that heart forgiveness workshop that I was at was sort of, how do you seal up your energy so it's not all leaking out and that you can use the energy that you hold in a positive way for yourself and the world at large, because we're all connected. And so, you know, I mentioned last time, I think that the car alarm interrupted me, but this idea that we are, as fractals, like we are all connected. Like I think we are all connected. And so when we're hurting ourselves or we're hurting other people, like it does reverberate through the whole, like it ripples in a very big way. So we just need to be intentional, which it doesn't, this is not to say you can never be angry or you just have to go with the flow on everything, but you just need to be in a good headspace so that you're clear. And we're living in a time with a lot of noise when things are not clear and we're not actually often in control of our own feelings. Like we're reacting to things that are fed in the loop on, you know, televisions, on social media feeds, and it's overwhelming. It's very overwhelming. And so holding, I think martial arts is this way of both a mental discipline and also a body discipline. And we know that the body has a huge amount of intelligence and connection to the field. And so before I go into sort of my proposal, I just want to talk about one of these synchronicities. And so in the Diamond Age, you know, I did a read aloud of that a day or so ago. And the premise is, this is Neal Stephenson's book from 1995. There's an iPad, you know, I'm conjecturing it's based on Negroponte's interactions with Gordon Pask. And this female actor at a distance is acting out a narrative story, interactive storybook that's fallen into the hands of this poor girl who's on the run with her brother from an abusive family situation. And essentially the actress that's reading the storybook becomes sort of her surrogate mother through this digital field. And there's a series of stories that are almost like quests, and she sort of develops across the different stories. And at the end, they're in a tower with blockchains, right? But in one of the very first stories, she's kind of kicked out of the apartment with her mother and her terrible abusive boyfriend. And the little girl gets sent out to the playground and she gets bullied. And then she wanders off and then she's reading the story and she enters into a cave where there is this dojo. It's a martial arts dojo run by a tiny little mouse. And this tiny little mouse has like dominated this giant Tyrannosaurus Rex. And the giant Tyrannosaurus Rex is actually one of the little stuffed animals that the girl has with her. And so it's this story of framing about martial arts and warriors and the Tyrannosaurus Rex saying like, why are we letting this little girl in? And then the mouse is like, well, actually, you know, I don't even know what you call it, but these practice engagements, like they're really just like a game, really. And kids can play games, and we should, who are you to say that a little girl who needs support, like should not be able to come into the dojo and do her thing, right? And then the Tyrannosaurus Rex is like, oh, you're right. And then he goes and sweeps the dojo and sort of it unfolds, but the martial arts is sort of at the core, and it's set in, well, it's some futuristic version of China and Shanghai. And so, and one of the other main characters is an alchemist. And so there is this backdrop of martial arts and discipline and energy work in the Diamond Age. So for me, I was, back in December, my mother had hip surgery and I was in the Little Rock Airport flying out to see her. And I don't think I've said this before, but if I have, apologies. But I was sitting in the airport, and the Little Rock Airport is really small. It's maybe 8 gates. So it's pretty awesome, but you can't really get direct flights many places. Actually, Charlotte, you could get a direct flight to Charlotte. So I drove up, it's about an hour drive from Hot Springs, and I left really early because I hadn't sort of scouted out the long-term parking and how to get there and whatever. So I'm there way too early. And there's only like one Starbucks or something, like one food place in the whole place. But so anyway, I get tucked in, I'm charging my phone at a little table by the gate, and there's a table next to me. And I'm not trying to overhear the conversation, but there are these two women and they're talking, and it's clear that they've been at a conference together. And they're from New Jersey. And then a couple other people walk up and they start talking, and like one is from Latin America and one is from the Bay Area but moved to London, and they've all been at the same conference, and they're throwing around words like the name is slipping out of my mind. But anyway, so they're throwing around and I'm trying to sort of figure out what they're talking about, because one of it's about schools and schools in Latin America, and then the other one is saying, oh, I've set up schools in Sweden and the Netherlands, and it turns out that they were all at the American Taekwondo Association conference. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting, because, you know, Korea is so central in all of this, and Samsung and the Unification Church and the ICUS conferences. And, you know, what was it, Lewis Terman, who was, I can't remember Frederick and Lewis, which is the father and which is the son, but the one who set up Silicon Valley, he set up like the MIT of Korea. And so all of this stuff happening in South Korea is really central. And it's interesting that this guy, H.U. Lee, left South Korea and originally went to Omaha, which is where Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway were, and then decided to set up the American Taekwondo Association in Little Rock, Arkansas. And, you know, I'm listening to all of this and I'm thinking, you know, as within that context, it's reminding me that one of these events that I had with the Chamber of Commerce on workforce development and after school and out of school time learning was being led by this guy who is an Italian, who was in charge of a Taekwondo school that was doing aftercare program for my kid's school in South Philly. And isn't that interesting? Like how does the Taekwondo people sort of interface with the Chamber of Commerce and out of school time learning and thinking about mental discipline and how this might work in a world where we're looking at AI cameras, Kinect video game monitors, physical immersive gaming, and out of school time learning and badging. And so this sort of like was one of those synchronistic things that unfolded for me. And then on the way back, I had my flight delayed, and then there was a couple of guys talking about business stuff. And it turns out they were talking about electronic health records and the Arkansas health system. And eventually I just stood up and I said, can you tell me what you think about blockchain digital twins and the health records, these electronic health records? And they just were like, what? But they did know what I was talking about. And so we kind of got into it a little bit with the Japan Moonshot Project. And then this older guy stands up and he knows them somehow, but he's also involved in like alternative energy, wind and solar in Arkansas. This is a second flight to Arkansas. And I'm like, but you know, it's circuits, it's all cybernetics, right? It's not really, you know, that's what we're talking about, is the circuit based control system. And then there's a young woman, and I'm, yeah, I don't know, I was talking about different things and saying like, of, you know, this goal, the Japan Moonshot Project, living outside of mind and body and time and space, it's been planned, you know, that the government, the people in the know, have a 50-year plan, so they know what's going to unfold well ahead of the general public. And then this younger woman chimes up and she's like, you're right about that, because actually I'm I don't know if she was former military or current military, but she's like, yeah, that's definitely true. And she's like, now I'm at Fort Dix and I'm working on drones. And so on the one hand, I have sort of the martial arts energy. And actually in Little Rock, the Grand Emperor, that was his name, the Grand Emperor H.U. Lee, they have this special Korean gate, thinking portal, in downtown Little Rock by the convention center, that's sort of equal parts Arkansas Riverstone and Korean tile and these strange volcanic statues that were taken off this island off the coast of South Korea that are never supposed to leave. Only with this special exception, they got to put this statue there. And all of this in Little Rock, which you would not expect, right? And so on the one hand, we have the energy systems there. And on the other hand, we have the other energy, right? Human energy potential in healthcare digital twinning and possibly drone electronic fields. And then we have the circuits, you know, the alternative energy folks, sustainability, on either end of my trip. That was sort of bookending my trip. And so I have this thing in my head about, again, energy management and being clear and being grounded. And my friend yesterday, like one of the moves, essentially it's talking, you sort of, you blow into your hands, like as a blessing, and then you put the right hand down to your dantian and the left hand up, and so it's sort of like connecting heaven and earth through your heart, and it's sort of this energetic connection of sort of the, and her focus is really on abundance and the abundance of love in the universe, right? This cosmic love, and then the grounding that we have access to both of those things. And I think that that is a beautiful idea. Now, again, I'm not saying that I would co-sign getting badges for that for out of school time learning and somehow, you know, having kids doing Kai Kong Do and opening quantum portal gates, you know, which is sort of what I'm wondering if that might be happening. I'm not saying I agree with all of that, but in foundationally, these are very, very ancient practices that, you know, Leibniz was really interested in, who, you know, was the co-founder of calculus with Newton. And this idea, he was fascinated with the I Ching and the idea of coming up with a universal language. And I feel like this characteristic universalis that he was talking about was sort of building off the I Ching with this idea of logic gates into the quantum, which with conversation theory, with an engagement with the other side. And so I have all the energy stuff, right? The energy, like managing your energy, understanding that there's stories that we live inside. And then I had an exchange today via email that sort of led me to want to share this. And again, I'm not sharing this from a point of like, I'm superior and you need to do what I do. I'm saying I've been very flawed. I've been learning. I think if we lived in a world where we could celebrate our progress as opposed to being ashamed of maybe doing something that we wouldn't do now because we know more, I think the world would be a better place, right? If we could have compassion and embrace ourselves for our past miscalculations or misunderstandings or ways of going about things that maybe were not effective, and then moving towards something that is more whole, right? And more effective. I mean, I think that that would be a great world. And so this is why I'm showing up, to say I was that person who used to be on Twitter and be like, scary thing, attention everyone, scary thing, here's another scary thing, here's a white paper scary thing. And this is information, right, that I'm throwing out, scary, 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 scary. And I've had said this before, I realized that that was actually probably causing more harm than good. And I didn't really have a framework. I wasn't meaning to do anybody harm. I thought I was educating people and that this was a good thing. But in terms of like managing our energy space, like throwing all this stuff with it not being actionable, maybe it wasn't good. I didn't do it because I was trying to be bad, but I think maybe it was not the best way either for myself, now that I understand about like holding energy and fear in your body and how that works and how that impacts your health, and then also the effect on other people. And it affected my family in negative ways. But in my head at the time, I thought, this is what it looks like to be a good person, is I have to go out and fix it. And I'm gonna just suggest that, so we're 5 years almost, you know, maybe give another month into the post-lockdown era. And thinking of our progress, like taking this pause and like that, all of the agendas are moving forward very quickly. All of the things with emerging tech and emerging finance are progressing. And I don't really see anything that has really backed off. And so what do they say? It's like, the stupid thing is to keep doing the same thing over and over and thinking you're gonna have a different result, right? And so what I've been trying to offer people, again, not to say that it's right, but simply say, hey, here's a thing for your toolbox. Here's a lens. Maybe it'll work for you. It's been working for me. My circumstances are different than your circumstances, but like, I wish I had had a mentor or a teacher or a kinder, older, wiser advisor, that when I was sort of working myself up into a frenzy, to like just give me a big hug and pat me on the back and say, I see you. I believe you. I feel your concern. I feel your intensity of wanting to fix things. But here are some other ways of being with this thing, right? That might be make it easier for you and might make it easier for other people, right? There are other options. And I didn't have that. And so I've had to blunder around and break things and then find it later. And, you know, it's hard because I feel like I really didn't get a second chance with my family. I mean, maybe that will still happen, but maybe they're listening. So I'm sorry. I didn't know better. I wish I had somebody to, like, you know, I didn't have my mystical Sufi, you know, fairy godmother back in that, when I was doing all of that 10 years ago. But now I have that different perspective. And so I don't think I'm going to be able to be anybody's Sufi mystic fairy godmother or the equivalent. But this is what I'm sort of laying out, is that things have not significantly changed. Things are not going backwards. And so how do we figure out how to situate ourselves within this evolving landscape in a way that we can surf this wave and work with the quantum field and work with our heart energy and work with the divine, work with God to find a way through that isn't a soul-killing venture, right? Because I don't think any of us want to go into this as a soul-killing venture. And I didn't mean to participate in it this way. So I did have someone contact me that I haven't corresponded with before. And they had a link to a particular thing that's kind of going around. And they're like, I'm really concerned about this. And I'm anxious about it. And like, what do you think? And maybe you can watch the whole thing or something like that. And it's a series. And like, I was aware of this thing. It's a thing. It's an internet thing that people do. Like, whenever something is an internet thing, then you should be like, why is this an internet thing, right? And then you should be skeptical, but you don't have to necessarily be afraid, you know? And so, you know, I wasn't going to watch this thing because, again, I'm doing my thing. And my thing doesn't have anything to do with it. I mean, I've talked, it was about those telepathy tapes or whatever. And yeah, I've talked a lot about child divination. I've talked about social impact bonds and autism. I've talked about these things. I talk about them the way I talk about them, but I'm not going to do a deep dive in the way somebody else is talking about them because I don't find that particularly actionable. And I feel like this is information that's being presented to people to be spread around for a certain purpose. And I'm just not going to put my energy into that because I'm super busy with the things that I'm working on, right? And so I sort of said that. And I said, you know, there were some words scattered into the email, like the post-human and the transhuman and the hive mind. And these were things to be afraid about. And like my feeling is, and I'm not trying to do this at this person's expense, but I think it's important for all of us to think about it. These words pigeonhole ideas and make them small and make people, and then they're small and compact and they just throw them around and it ripples and it creates this energetic field without a lot of understanding. And so, yes, I've maybe used Hive Mind or Global Brain and it's been a year and a half, 2 years, because I moved into maybe Gaia fascia, but I don't want to just put a little tidy label on it. I'd rather talk about these bigger ideas, bigger themes than just to have like a little label, put it in, it's done. And we know what that is, because I think a lot of people who throw around transhuman or posthuman or whatever, like they think they know what it is. And then it's usually labeled as this is a thing and it's scary. And I'm not saying it's like I like these ideas, but it's a signifier of like scary, 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 scary. Be afraid of this thing that's coming after you, right? And I don't think that's useful. I don't find that to be useful energy. I would rather talk about theories and ideas and figuring out the operating system for this thing, right? And so what I said is like you might want to just look at the wording that you used in the email and think about those words. Like, where did they come from? I don't think those are your words. Like, no one before 2021 maybe is using transhuman. I mean, unless you're with the transhuman people, but like the general public, people are not using that word. People are not using hive mind as a common word. It got instilled as a mimetic into the consciousness of many, many people. And how is that? And I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying reflect on how that happened, right? And reflect on what that means. Because is that good for you if what the tagline is, I'm very anxious? Because I think that those are meant to be anxiety-producing words. And that was my suggestion. I'm not saying you have to do it. I'm just saying you might try it because if you're anxious, this might help, right? And the person did not take that well. I think they thought I was, you know, making assumptions about them. And I said, you know, essentially you, It's important to understand the stories that we inhabit and how we create them with words. And if we can think about our thinking, that's useful. Like, and to me, I find it useful. Of course, I'm somebody who's totally in my head, right? That's how I operate. And so I said, why don't you look up? Like, here are some words: biosemiotics, mimetics, reality tunnel, free energy principle, metacognition. Like, here's five concepts. And if you have that as a basis, that's something you can work from. Like, you can at least step back, like when you're anxious, and say, okay, what is this? And, you know, I think a while back, Cliff had a video, like, my view is just a view. I think that was the title, but essentially it's sort of like taking a step back. And when you're interacting with someone, like, what you're hearing from them is what's in their head. Like, it's the space from which they're operating. It's all the stories that are going on in their head about what they think is happening in the dialogue. In this case, the person was not responding, was not interested in really taking my advice, I think. And they found it off-putting that I've said, hey, maybe you can look up these ideas. And they took it as a slam, like, oh. They were very invested in the ideas that they had, and that's fine. But they were also anxious. So if you really want to hold on to these ideas, but they make you miserable, like, then you're choosing that. Like, just to be clear, because we're in a world where, to me, before I think you can do anything else, you actually have to be in control of your own consciousness and energy. Like, maybe not every minute, but know that that's a thing that is important, and then practice it with some regularity. And if the thing that you're in makes you miserable, then maybe you should consider some other options. And maybe you look around for those other options and what they might be. But some of that is actually thinking about how you think about things. Okay, so I'm going to pause for a second. I'm going to pull up the screen with a couple of the definitions, because I think all of us, this was not directed at this one particular person. I really have no idea who this person is, other than they were anxious and unhappy with my response. But I think we could all use a reminder about how this thing works with information, because that's the big piece with Joseph's the quantum realism is information. We're 3D information, there's quantum information, there's an interface of the information through energy, and how that all works is being inserted into the information space of the metaverse, which includes social media feeds and things that you, Substacks and Twitter and all of that stuff is information, and the people running the structure of that know that. And so you're wandering around, you know, and you really don't know what you're in. And I'm saying, if you have an awareness of what you're in, I'm not saying you're not going to make missteps, but you may be a little bit better informed. Okay, so for each of these, I'm just going to read just the first paragraph. But this is the first word that I put out, biosemiotics. Biosemiotics, from the Greek, bios, life, and something else, observant of signs, is a field of semiotics and biology that studies the pre-linguistic meaning-making, biological interpretation processes, productions of signs and codes, and communication processes in the biological realm. Biosemiotics integrates the findings of biology and semiotics and proposes a paradigmatic shift in the scientific view of life, in which semiosis, which is sign process, including meaning and interpretation, is one of its imminent and intrinsic features. The term biosemiotic was first used by Friedrich S. Rothschild in 1962, but Thomas Sebuck, Thor von Uxkill, Jesper Hoffmeyer, and many others have implemented the term and field. The field is generally divided between theoretical and applied biosemiotics. Insights from biosemiotics have been adopted in the humanities and social sciences, including human-animal studies, human-plant studies, and cybersemiotics. It is defined as the study of meaning-making processes in the living realm, or to elaborate, a study of signification, communication, and habit formation of living processes. So just think about what I've been saying about being online and social media feeds and information as having its own sort of emergent life form and evolutionary process as it's spreading throughout users on social media feeds, right? How things are signified, communicated, and the habit of using those. And that's what I was trying to point out to this individual. Like, look at your the words that you are habitually using, and then reflect on how that affects your biology, right? Because it does. Semiosis is the creating and changing sign relations in nature. So I had a feeling about a lot of these words that were being put out by the World Economic Forum early on, that it was actually spell casting and like mesmerism. Like, they were putting out these ideas and people would respond to the idea, and the idea would get reinforced and it would be back and forth and back and forth. And so I had someone else to say, hey, what about XYZ 15-minute city? And I said, I don't use that term. I don't use that term because I feel like it's actually a mind virus. That isn't a term that I would choose, and it's limiting. When you say 15-minute city, people think that they know what that means, but generally it doesn't have to do with any of the things that I find interesting, so I don't use it. But you could look up said city, 15-minute city, in my blog, because I've written about that, but I don't limit it into a little container that's called a 15-minute city because I find that reductive and not useful, right? And so this semiosis, the creating and changing of signs, like what words are given, how are those words evolved? You know, sometimes we have a word that we think, like, one group thinks it means one thing, right? You know, we have people who talk about like social justice and equity, diversity, equity, inclusion. Well, they probably don't mean that you would put toddlers on a blockchain in the basement for social justice, but that's kind of where it's going. So you have a word where people think they know what it means, but it's like, I don't think you really know what that word means. I don't think it means what you think it means. And then, so how is that coding working? The biological basis of all signs and sign interpretation, and interpretive processes, codes, and cognition in organisms. And again, a lot of our thoughts are totally unconscious, and they're based in our models of reality. And so I think that biosemiotics is a really important thing to understand, is that we live in stories. Stories are made out of words and ideas, and we share them and they get spread around. And the physics of that with digital information is crazily, dizzyingly beyond what we could even imagine. And they have an impact on us and our biology. And so it actually behooves us, I think, to at least know what it is. You know, whether or not you want to take action or incorporate that into how you see the world, totally up to you. I'm not here to force you to do anything, but I'm saying that it's an option to be considered. Okay. So then the next word is memetics. And, you know, we've all heard about memes. And of course, we've got like the meme coins now, right? And these are evolutionary ideal systems, idea systems that are circulated and tracked and then managed algorithmically through the feed. Memetics is a theory of the evolution of culture based on Darwinian principles, with the meme as the unit of culture. The term meme was coined by biologist Richard Dawkins in his 1976 book, The Selfish Gene, to illustrate the principle he later called universal Darwinism. All evolutionary processes depend on information being copied, varied, and selected, a process known as variation with selective retention. The conveyor of the information being copied is known as the replicator, with the gene functioning as the replicator in biological evolution. Dawkins proposed that the same process drives cultural evolution, and he called his second replicator the meme, citing examples such as musical tunes, catchphrases, fashion, and technology. Like genes, memes are selfish replicators and have causal efficacy. In other words, their properties influence their chances of being copied and passed on. Some succeed because they are valuable or useful to their human hosts, while others are more like viruses. Okay, and so in this case, I believe, and I don't think that the person meant it this way, but this is why I'm trying to say how I reacted. I have my own thing going on. I'm not really interested in watching a series of something that, one, concerns you, and two, is a whole series of information. Because to me, I said you're programming yourself. Like, when you do that, you're actually programming yourself. Now, again, I'm not saying I'm not programming. I'm just programming myself with different stuff, and it's not arriving like via random people or algorithmic feeds. The stuff I'm programming myself with is, I have, like I've said, a small team of collaborators, and we're sort of puzzling out, parsing through parts of this puzzle. And it's the part that interests me, and I share my findings, but I'm not saying that I have a lock on all of the things and that this is better somehow than the things that other people are working on. It's just, I saw this, the whatever those telepathy tapes as a mind virus, right? It's literally like a mind virus because it's telepathy, right? And tape, sticky. It's a sticky tape, right? And I'm much more interested in like the idea of telepathy and psychokinesis outside of what someone else says. Now, you could say that I'm promoting mind viruses and because I'm making videos, and that's like, yeah, clearly I'm participating in information transmission. But when things get uplifted and go viral, there's a reason, and it's about memetics. And I think some of this is actually mesmerism. It's mesmerizing people into stories and fields, and sometimes they're mesmerizing it and the people are like, oh, that's very interesting, I like that idea. Or sometimes they're like, oh my God, that's a terrible idea. And you can mesmerize like both, either polarity, but as you consume it, you're also participating. And this is why I'm saying like manage your energy and manage how you participate in the field, because it actually does matter. Just be intentional about it. Just know what you're doing, which is what I was asking this person, or suggesting that they consider doing, is be aware of how you're engaging with the information. So at this point, I do have an email list that's ancient, and I don't even know if it reaches people anymore. And so when I do an updated YouTube video, blog post, I'll send it out. But that's really the only outgoing version. It's rather rare, unless there's something really specific that like connects back to research someone was doing, that I'll directly email a link to my video and say, hey, you should watch this. At this point, I'm just sort of, again, 98.5% of the time, just laying it out there, knowing that the algorithms are not my favor, which I'm fine with. I'm not really up for algorithmic promotion. And then if you find it and it's useful, great. But so, you know, I don't know how that fits in. I doubt any of my stuff is ever going to go viral. But understanding the biosemiotics and the memetics and how you engage with memes, and again, now they're going to be on the blockchain for this evolution, right? Evolutionary economics of consciousness, conscious capitalism, is where what's unfolding. Okay, so, you know, I've mentioned reality tunnels before. I read the Robert Anton Wilson's Prometheus Rising, but for those who may not have heard me talk about it, I'll give you a short overview. These are all just from Wikipedia. A reality tunnel is a theory that with a subconscious set of mental filters formed from beliefs and experiences, every individual interprets the same world differently. Hence, truth is in the eye of the beholder. So in this particular exchange, my perception was I was acknowledging the anxiety that this person expressed and saying, hey, you might want to try this. Now, their perspective on the situation was, you have made presumptions about me that are inaccurate and hurtful and not kind. So this is one situation, right? This email exchange, very different perspectives based on the internal worlds and the reality tunnels the two parties are inhabiting. And again, one or the other, I I'm blunt with people, but I'm not intentionally mean. But depending on your headspace, like, sure, you can, you know, again, just be one more of these people who downvotes my videos on the thing. That's fine, because I'm not really here for the upvoting or whatever. But the two perspectives on like, hey, you might want to try this, and like, how dare you tell me like how to be, it depends on your headspace. And so again, this level of metacognition, which we'll get to, I think is important. Okay. It is similar to the idea, the reality tunnel, to the representative realism, and was coined by Timothy Leary, and it was expanded upon by Robert Anton Wilson, who wrote about the ideas extensively in Prometheus Rising. Wilson and Leary co-wrote a chapter in Leary's 1988 book, Neuropolitik, in which they explained further. The gene pool politics which monitor power struggles among terrestrial humanity are transcended in this info world. In other words, seen as static artificial charades. One is neither coercively manipulated into another's territorial reality nor forced to struggle against it with reciprocal game playing, the usual soap opera dramatics. One simply elects consciously whether or not to share the other's reality tunnel. And so I feel like what social media really has done is kind of put the idea of reality tunnel and turbo drive in its sort of second order cybernetics. So as you engage more and more on platforms, they know you, and then they reinforce the existing reality tunnel that you're already in. So they drive you deeper and deeper and deeper into the reality tunnel. Now, my perspective on this is that there's no way out of the reality tunnel. Like there's, I'm not saying, oh, I know about reality tunnels, so I'm not in one. No, I'm just in the reality tunnel that is interested in playing around with the idea that there are such thing as reality tunnels, and that you could try on different ones or sort of wander in and look around and see how that suits you or how it feels or what different viewpoints you get from different reality tunnels. I mean, I think it's useful to have a sense of what those are. And in another instance, I had someone contact me that I've, you know, known from my education activism world for a long time, who, you know, is someone who is a longtime professor of education and very active in progressive politics and is still understanding the two-party system as the thing that is something that they're focused on, and they're very upset about how the election turned out. And so they send an email to me and several other people that I don't know, asking me to join this Indivisible group to oppose the Trump, you know, presidency and all the Republicans. And I was like, well, you know me, the first thing I do is I go like, who's on the board? Where's their money from? What are they doing? You know, because I don't, you know, there's something going on, right? And so the first person who was listed on the board list was working for a community redevelopment fund. And I was like, okay, so I put the name of the community development fund in there with social impact bonds. And what do you know? Boop, here's a whole webinar on pay for success finance and social determinants of health in poor communities. And so I kind of came back and I said, you know, I've done all my research on this and I'm not playing your team sport, join team X or team Y. I don't really think too much about it. Just join because I know that they play both sides and they'll tell team X, oh, this is like supportive mutualism and equity and justice. We're not going to tell you about the outside in robot and AI hedge funds. Oh, you know, or we're on team Y. Oh, we're going to, you know, pitch you on free market, limited government, you know, wonderment, you know, freedom, patriot and freedom, you know, but we're not going to tell you about the cybernetics and the blockchain smart contracts surpassing the Constitution. So they've got both sides and they're spinning them into the same space. And I'm like, I don't care how you costume this. Once you're in a box, the system can push your buttons. So I'm, you know, I don't like either of these options. And so I'm encouraging the people who are, you know, I replied all to stop being in a box and learn these issues for yourself, because this is how they get distracted, naive people from team sport playing to help usher in digital slavery, you know, or, you know, the psychic faith-based ant computer, like however you want to phrase the thing that's coming around cybernetics and impact policy and socio-technical cyber-physical systems and social, you know, token engineering and gamification. This is all coming because they're going to tell the Democrats one side and the conservatives the other side, and it's all going to the same place. And that's why you need a Trump, is to get these other people to say, hey, you know what? The pushback was like, well, you must be one of those progressives who thinks that you don't have to do anything if people don't perfectly align with your views. Well, anybody who follows my research, which this person used to do, knows the depths and commitment I have made to interrogate all of it, which touches every single part of social policy. I'm not just setting that aside, but this is what a reality tunnel does to you if you go too deep inside and you can't step out and go, huh, well, I wonder what it would look like if I'm not asking you go to the down in the deep basement or the back corner of the parking garage or the penthouse. Just go in the lobby and look around. Maybe your view, maybe there will be something new that opens up that you didn't see before. And so that's why understanding reality tunnels is important, in my opinion. And then the last word that I offered was metacognition. Metacognition is an awareness, let me just make this a little bit bigger, is an awareness of one's thought processes and understanding of the patterns behind them. The term comes from the root meta, meaning beyond or on top of, and metacognition can take many forms, such as reflecting on one's ways of thinking and knowing when and how oneself and others use particular strategies for problem solving. And there are generally two components, cognitive conceptions and cognitive regulation systems. Research has shown that both components of metacognition play key roles in metaconceptual knowledge and learning. Meta-memory, defined as knowing about memory, and mnemonic strategies is an important aspect of metacognition. Writings on metacognition date back at least as far as two works by the Greek philosopher Aristotle. 384 to 322 BC on the Sol and the Parva Naturalia. And so this is what I'm asking for people. So anyway, I'm going to have my pitch in a second, but this is what I would like for us to be able to spend more time, like manage our energy, be grounded, consider the abundance of the cosmos and our connection to the divine, think about our thinking, understand the landscape that we're walking into, which is the physics of digital information, which is really complicated and used to emotionally manipulate us based on our very robust digital twins that already exist in the social media landscape, right? And then knowing all of this, can we move forward in this time of admittedly grand challenges, no matter what reality tunnel you're in, and find a way to be graceful with it, which is kind of goes back to the Qigong and the way and being in alignment. And I think you can only be in alignment and make your way through if you actually are in alignment with yourself. Like you actually know thyself and that you have the presence to be quiet with yourself and to love yourself despite all of your flaws, meaning me, you know, all of my flaws, and still working on loving myself and being open to the next thing and to try to exhibit a metacognitive process, which for me, again, when I came and I said, oh, look at this connection. Oh, look at that. Maybe I shouldn't go there because I don't know, those people, they might be a XYZ thing, right? Doing XYZ, you know, if I had slid into the post-humanist, transhumanist, you know, hive mind thing, I might be like, oh, not going there, right? But that would have been a loss for me because I was wrong about that. Because the most powerful thing is the heart, in the heart space. And leading from that place, and it's hard because, again, I have the heart and the head. I think whatever my human design, I'm like all heart and head and throat. Like I'm all up here, right? Which might be pretty obvious, although maybe I'm a little bit in my hands. So that would have been a loss for me. And then like pat me on the back that I had enough metacognition to say, maybe you should, you know, look at how you're operating in the world. Is this the best way for you? Maybe you should could set that aside and see how it works doing it a different way. And for me, that thing actually worked. So here's sort of my proposal. So this is this timeline. I guess the CDC museum has a timeline. I guess we shouldn't be shocked, right? And so we're sort of in the middle of the lead up, you know, 5 years ago in all of the things, and which sort of, I guess, officially was March 13th, a national emergency sort of the thing. And so I guess what I want to propose as an idea, and again, could be a bad idea. I don't know how it would turn out. I'm not trying to do a gotcha on this person. I'm saying, like, I think 5 years in, it's time for us to reflect on our learnings, right? There was a lot of trauma that we've lived through for 5 years, in many respects. Some of it around public health, right? Some of it around war, some of it around geopolitics, some of it around financial situations. You know, what I've often said is that a lot of things that were conjectured about in the first year or two didn't actually pan out the way that the fear element was. And I would say, I would own that myself, right? Like my sense is that the schools were going away and you know, and things are progressing clearly, like the OER is moving forward, but the timeline was off, right? I was not right about the timeline. Like we didn't all starve, like we didn't, the dollar hasn't disappeared, all of these things. And so it's, I think it behooves us to say, okay, so knowing what we know about what we thought and then how it was and then how it's been and what might be happening moving forward. And again, trying on the lens, if you like, that maybe it's not about punishment and puppets, but it's about epiphanies and emergence. And again, where you sit with that, right? Some people are like, if it's epiphany and emergence, but I'm not in charge, I don't want to do it. Okay, yeah. But we're going to have to go down this river. Like we're going down, it's coming, right? And so we've got this range of options from like they're going to control you and punish you all the time to maybe they're going to craft a game board to create emergent behavior. And maybe there's some other options that I haven't really considered, but these are sort of the two ones that I have in play for me right now. And then figure out how we can have a conversation with God, the field, the universe, just like the Taekwondo people showing up to me in the airport, followed by the blockchain, electronic health records, solar power, drone army people. These are messages to try to reinforce how I'm thinking. Now you could just say like, oh, that's when when you go out and you buy a red car and you never see red cars and then you see red cars everywhere or something. It could be that. But for me, I don't find I have a lot of agency in the material, so that's why I'm looking to the informational, right? Because clearly a ton of this stuff is about the physics of information. So here's my pitch in closing, just to sort of finish it up. So my pitch is March 13th, right? So we're, about a month out from that, a little bit more. Between that time and the solstice, I'm proposing the idea of a spring break. A spring break from mind viruses. And I'm not saying to like go cold turkey on your social media, but what I am saying is like, I'm inviting people, and again, this is not compulsory, and I'm not even saying it's working, and I'm not trying to like, if you're some AI saying, Allison's trying to get us off the trail so that we can go and do all the sneaky stuff for, the early summer, and then she'll have everybody off just not doing anything, and we can just pounce and unroll all our plants. Like, that is not what I'm saying. But I think that a lot of people are super anxious for a lot of different reasons that have a lot to do with digital information and mind viruses and memetics and biosemiotics. And say, could we use this time, mid-March, mid-April, March to April, May, like 3 months, and maybe just, not cold turkey, but just cut back a little bit, and then lean into our, our space of groundedness and, the heavens and the earth, and listen to the world around us and see what conversations you have, like who's your ruby-crowned kinglet, right? Who's going to come visit you? Like, what emerges from this spring, which is a time of growth and rebirth, and reflect on your thinking, reflect on the words we're using, reflect on how you are in the world, and is there a way to be that way in a way that is maybe more graceful and less anxious? And I'm not making any promises, but I'm just curious if other people will like end up with these synchronicities, right? Like, what are the odds that I move to Hot Springs and like one of the first groups of people I meet has a connection to Julian Gresser's Santa Barbara community blockchain wellness, Qigong heart-centered, stuff. And again, this person has no idea. I'm not putting them in a box and saying bad. Actually, this is a person who offers amazing lessons that are actually important to me. And so, but that these are interesting synchronicities, right? Like, this is not a big city. Like, I'm not in New York. And so it's like you draw things to you when you open yourself to that. So anyway, so I'm proposing a spring break from mind viruses between March 13th and the solstice. I didn't look up the date of the solstice. And then maybe after that, if anybody tries it and has an interesting experience, again, reflecting on their thinking, reflecting on the past 5 years, being intentional, maybe you could do something energetic. I make hearts. Maybe you could do something that you do, make music or bake something or, use something, be connected to the earth somehow, dance something, and see what communications come, and then like shoot me an email and say, hey, this is how it unfolded for me when I reflected on the growth of the past 5 years. Because I think we can look back and we don't have to mourn all of that. I learned a lot of things. I had a lot of losses, but I also learned a lot. And actually the learning was often because of the losses, because I wanted to figure it out. Like, because I wanted to understand, again, not to make the people who walked away from me wrong per se, but I wanted to understand the psychology of it, right? Because I didn't want to be, I think, not that I didn't want to be wrong, but I wanted to understand how we understand the world, how these models are, because even in this email exchange, it was very clear, you know, the limitations of digital information and communication of emotion on there, although the other person was pretty sharp too. But the perspective, right? I was saying here, in my mind, I was saying here are some tools you might want to try to resolve your anger and anxiety to you know, and how you can engage with information. You might try it. And their perception was I was making presumptions about them, and I can't remember the word. There were some unkind words, you know, I was unkind, but there were some other, you know, that my participation was not welcome. And they're certainly entitled to that view. Again, but I would say if you're weighing the two and you're seeing how this feels in your body, I think it's going to be hurting our bodies to hold all of this anxiety and anger, without cleansing it out and re-nourishing us with things that are important and looking for the blessings and looking for the beauty in the world. And, you know, spring is going to be coming and it's going to be beautiful. And, you know, don't miss the bluebirds because you're scrolling through, you're doom scrolling through Facebook or Twitter. And when you're doing it, maybe you can catch yourself and go, oh, that's the reality tunnel. I can step away now. I can step away and take a break. So anyway, I'm just curious what you think, good, bad, spring break from mind viruses, try out your own, like reprogramming your own biocomputer, as John Lilly might say. And again, I'm not co-signing John Lilly's insertion of probes into monkey brains or any of those things. But again, we do, in my mind, at this point, we should start to try to figure out how the operating system works, because I think actually our minds and bodies are far more powerful than any of the engineered intelligence that they're working on. Only we're too captivated by the mesmerizing screens to notice it and figure it out. And yeah, let's support each other in doing that when possible, when it's welcome. So, all right. Good night, everybody.